From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 9th day of June, 2017. I'm Todd Dixon. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll also go through this morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. They were released at 11 o'clock Central Time. As we wrap up our time together, we'll check in with the weather forecast, not only with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, but also from Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey Research Institute. We'll do all that during the Closing Market Report. And then if you can stay with us, Commodity Week comes up next. We'll do a live broadcast of the program today because of this morning's report. Our panelists this week will include Al Klein, Supplies Commodities out of Minnesota, Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons. And it all takes place right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Great to be with you, sir. How are you this Friday, Todd?
You know, it's been a really busy Friday, but the USDA reports came in. I had some things to do here on campus. We were busy at the house at home, and I don't know, things kind of slipped away from me, and I didn't get a chance really to think too much about the report numbers. I saw that they did come in with some bigger numbers for both the wheat and the soybeans. Can you start me out with those, please?
Yeah, I think the focal point probably is the world numbers. I mean, we did get a bigger jump in 16-17 U.S. bean stocks, and ending stocks went from 435 to 450 million bushels on a reduction in crush. But the world number is probably the biggest attention getter, if you ask me. The wheat number came in above the highest trade guess by the Reuters poll, a little over 256 million tons. And this is for 16-17 as well. Soybeans came in at 93.2, again, above the highest trade guess for the ending stocks number on the Reuters poll. Essentially, we're talking about 21% more beans in the world right now, Todd, than we had a year ago, and the brand new U.S. crop now in the ground. And so we saw in the trade today, the corn and bean weather premium was very much left in the market going into the weekend because we know we've got hot. We think we've got a cool down with some rains coming, but the trade is not willing to take the weather premium out. It's a welcome change from what we've dealt with the last couple, 3 years. So we only partially digested the USDA report today, I think, and we could see, I think, quite a bit of volatility next week, both volatility to the downside led by the soybeans or volatility to the upside led by the corn and supported by the soybeans and supported especially by the spring wheat. So I would put probably next week's trade, the fundamentals and the technicals together, some of the big moving averages as you add the all together. And I think maybe next week's trade could define the trend all the way heading into the grain stocks and new acreage numbers at the end of the month. So I'd say probably if you're in the cab, if you don't listen to Will Radio every day, you better start next week. I think it may pay off.
Yeah, turn your attention to the front and the back half of the report because those meteorologists are going to make a big difference. What are they telling you, in fact, about next week? And what have you seen about the weather forecast for next week and the week after? And are they supportive of higher prices? And that would, of course, mean we'd have lower yields.
Yeah, I think the Northern Plains, because of the concentration, we talked about this last week, the concentration of the Dakotas and the Minnesota corn and bean crop being so close to one another and right along the Minnesota-Dakotas border for the most part, as far as if you look at a Nass County production map for those three states, that's really where the heart and soul of the corn and bean production is. And so we could easily, I think, move from a spring wheat-led weather market north and west of where we're talking about the row crops to right in the heart of the row crops. And that would really, I think, take the market to that next level. Now, the question then comes into the idea, and I've been asked this by producers, why aren't you turning bullish? Why aren't you buying into this market? Well, I would be more likely to if I really felt like next week was going to set us up for a hot and dry pattern going all the way into the end of June. I'm not there yet. The models, both the European and the American models, suggest that we will get some relief, some precip relief, and especially some temperature relief. And I did a radio show in Fargo, North Dakota today and talked to some people there that had just been out in the fields doing some crop watching and crop talking with producers. And they're not hurting yet in the key bean and corn areas at this point, in my opinion, Todd. So when I see Chinese meal stocks now at a 7-year high, I see the Chinese crush margins at a 5-year low. I see a Brazilian currency that's probably going to lose ground against the United States dollar maybe the rest of this year because their inflation data is at a 10-year low. They're probably going to cut interest rates, which usually weakens your currency. I think there's a lot of reasons why soybeans could still keep a cap on the market, and I'm still a seller of rallies. Doesn't mean I want to sell it right here, right now, but still a seller of rallies at this stage.
Still a seller of rallies on the cash market, old crop corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I made a 10% sale before the report this week on the old crop corn and hanging out with the new crop corn. It's still only about 20% of insured bushels sold on the cash side. I'm really going after, and I wrote in detail about this after looking at the U of I numbers and Purdue's and K-State's and Ohio State's and my own numbers and looking at them with my clients. I'm really still holding out for $800 an acre this year on corn. I'm still holding out for $600 an acre on beans. I've got the $600 per acre partially complete in the cash sales from earlier this year using 60 bushels and $10 cash beans in east of the Mississippi River. But I still think we could get to $800 an acre on revenue, and I'm trying to use that because we do have to think about the sliding scale of yield in case we do have some weather problems in the next couple of weeks. It really do trim our yields around the country.
So for the soybeans, your number probably was pretty easy to get to on those bushels you sold earlier in the year. How hard now?
Well, that's the thing. I think you have to have the weather. When I looked at the report today, and this is probably the best question I've been asked all week, and I mean that sincerely, is it seems to me it's going to be really tough given what's going on with Brazil's currency and China's meal and hog industry to get back above $10 November beans without weather. And so I'm looking at beans the same way I did the wheat a year ago. And I really see some good times ahead for the wheat market and today's report, in fact, because I think the winter wheat yield and the production of, 5 billion that USDA gave us today is way too high because our crop conditions are down at levels both nationally and in the state of Kansas here at levels not seen since 2015 when our yields were in the low 40s for a national yield. So I still think USDA is too high. And I think I'll feel better about that because I'm actually going to travel next week out to the Colorado border and back and kind of do my first hard red wheat winter tour by myself. So that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, so that'll be looking at that crop. We'll be looking forward to it. Will you have that complete by the time we get to Friday next week?
If you and I can hook up on the mobile phone, you betcha, sir.
That's my plan.
Yeah, me too.
If that's your plan, that's my plan.
That's my plan, too.
All right, well, good enough. How about for livestock producers? That's been kind of a funky market.
Yeah, I think the cattle market especially is one where you want to split up your marketing plan. Today's report did take meat production down, led by beef, because of these carcass weights being 20-plus pounds below last year at this time. I think you've got plenty of premium in the summer. I'm eager to hedge some summer fat cattle. I'm not eager to hedge October, December because I think the market's taking too much premium out. We're going to pull cattle ahead. We're going to keep weights tight. This heat's going to keep the weights down as well. So I think fall, you could ask for a little bit more. Hogs, I'm kind of on red alert right now to get some hedges in place because we just hit the $82, $83 in the summer. I think that's overvalue. So I'll be doing something in that next week, I suspect.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Now, that, of course, is Mike Zuzalom. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, deferred maintenance on facilities at land-grant universities across the country is threatening to undercut U.S. agricultural research efforts and, with that, the long-term competitiveness of the American farmer. President Donald Trump's promised infrastructure package could be a solution to the staggering backlog, but competition for federal dollars, if Trump comes through, will be fierce. Anticipating that, the Association for Public Land Grant Universities is working with farm groups to prepare a pitch to get Congress and the administration to use the expected infusion of cash to help fix or replace aging labs, greenhouses, and other facilities. The ask is somewhere in the ballpark of $10 billion over the next 10 years. It's a sum the groups believe can be leveraged into several times that in private investment. On that note, the Senate Agriculture Committee next week will turn its attention to research in the Farm Bill. As Capitol Hill interest in boosting funding grows stronger and the Trump administration is looking to make cuts to Farm Bill programs, the hearing will be held Thursday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. In other news from the Senate, a committee there will consider legislation next week that would put in place a permanent waiver to reed vapor pressure, or RVP, requirements to allow E15 sales year-round. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee announced the hearing set for Wednesday, June the 14th. The hearing focuses on the Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act, introduced in March by Nebraska Republican Senator Deb Fischer. A companion bill was introduced in the U.S. House in March by Nebraska Republican Representative Adrian Smith. Each year, the Environmental Protection Agency regulates RVP for gasoline and ethanol blends from June 1st until September 15th. During these months, the EPA restricts the retail sale of fuels with ethanol above 10%. The legislation would extend the RVP waiver to ethanol blends above 10%. When introducing the bill, Fischer said the move would increase market access opportunities for higher blends of ethanol by allowing retailers to sell E15 and higher blends year-round. And finally today, RCAF USA, the Ranchers Cattlemen Association Legal Fund, United Stock Growers of America, and others are calling on the U.S. federal government to investigate a corruption scandal by meat processor JBS. RCAF sent a comprehensive 11-page request to President Trump, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue for a full investigation and strict antitrust enforcement act action in the corruption scandal. Citing news reports, the JBS admits bribing nearly 2,000 politicians in Brazil. RCAF USA wrote that JBS's business model included unlawful practices that influence policymakers, and that's possible JBS deployed that same business model right here in the United States. JBS is the second largest beef packer in the U.S. and owns the nation's largest cattle feeding company, which the group contends was used by JBS in conjunction with imported cattle and beef to manipulate the cattle markets in 2015 and 2016, causing fed cattle prices to fall by more than $850 per head. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Stay with us for the whole hour, if you can, today. Coming up in the second half hour on our home station, Commodity Week, we'll talk with Ellen Dearden and Al Kleiss of Kleiss Commodities out of Minnesota, along with Greg Johnson of the Andersons about this morning's WASDE report, and then, of course, about the weather and the impact on the marketplace. Speaking of which, Eric Snodgrass is here now. He's from Agrible. Eric, thanks for being with this afternoon. We're going to talk about the weather during Commodity Week, I know, but we'll need you to give us some insight into what we can expect over the coming week or so. Tell me a bit more about what you've been seeing.
Well, Todd, we saw some pretty interesting movement in the price of corn leading into this June 9th report, and a lot of that had to do with the forecast for some heat that we're going to start seeing pushing through the Central Plains later on today and then really moving toward the east by the time we get into Saturday and Sunday. We're going to see 90-plus degree heat building in underneath a pretty substantial ridge in the flow of the jet stream. In fact, some locations will probably push 100 degrees. And we've been talking about this for a while, the fact that the jet stream is going to be able to push a ridge by the time we got into the first week of June into the center part of the country. Now, something to think about here, though, is that the northern plains, which have been very dry, will some locations are going to benefit from this heat. And what I mean here is that we're going to be kicking off some showers and storms. In fact, I'm watching for the severe weather potential for the next 5 to 6 days for the Northern Plains. It's going to be hit or miss, but that location, which has been quite dry, especially in the Dakotas, could benefit from some of this rain. I'm also watching for the potential for some storms in northern Illinois today and into early tomorrow. Now, if we think about this heat, is this heat really a bad thing? Well, this time of year, the answer to that is really kind of no. Now, if it was the end of June or any week in July, I'd say that heat like this will compromise the health of a corn crop. Not so much beans, but definitely with the corn. But because we're still several weeks away from pollination, this heat is not really going to be a bad thing. Plus, it's not going to be long-lasting. But the big question is, when does it break down? When do we get back into a different pattern? Well, what I'm seeing is that by Sunday night, another deep trough is going to be pushing into the west. Now, the trajectory of that trough is moving more toward the north-central plains, and that's significant. And that's because as that trough, which is pretty substantially deep, and it is showing up in three separate models, okay, so that gives me confidence, as it moves into the northern plains, we're expecting quite a bit of precipitation in parts of Montana, parts of North and South Dakota, parts of Minnesota, and in Wisconsin. Now, as that system moves to the north, it does mean that it's not going to be bringing us major, major cool temperatures here in the central states. But I'm hoping that because the Gulf of Mexico is open, that's what we call it in atmospheric sciences, it's open, meaning we're going to get flow from the Gulf of Mexico, that we could see a decent chance for some showers and storms by midweek next week. So this is what we're looking for. And it's been dry in central Illinois. I looked this up this morning. The last time we had precipitation greater than a tenth of an inch of rain was May 25th, and on that day we got 0.21 inches of rain. We've had two little events that brought us 0.08 of an inch, but overall we've been in a rather dry pattern. We continue this for much longer, we're going to start to see some negative effects with this. But the good news is that the overall flow of the jet stream is such that it is still quite wavy, quite active across the North Pacific, and that will help keep bringing in these troughs. Now, if we kind of just take that forecast and stretch it out a little bit longer, here's some of the things that I'm seeing. There is a second feature coming in by next weekend, not the one we're talking about right now, but the weekend following. I'm less certain about the exact timing and strength of the trough that's going to kick off this system, but if it does, that could mean that next week gives us two chances of seeing some rain. And rain in the middle of June like this is very good for that corn crop. If we look a little bit longer term, I'm starting to see that a ridge is going to set up to our west around June 19th. And why that's significant is if that ridge establishes way out west by June 19th, we could get overall a northwest flow pattern through the central states and then into the I states here. And if we do have that, that generally points to ridge riding thunderstorms in our northwest flow. I'll also say this, we've been talking about these longer range forecast updates by the European model. Well, the latest 30-day outlook from the European model still comes in warmer than average for us, but it is less dry than the previous run, which means we have better chances of seeing more precipitation with that run. So if I were to kind of wrap everything up in what I just said, it boils down to this. Yeah, we're going to be seeing some heat over the weekend, but the flow pattern continues to evolve such that we're not seeing any long, sustained stresses for the Corn Belt over the next 30 days or so. Now, with any summertime weather forecast, that can change quickly, and I'll keep everyone updated as soon as I possibly can with any major changes. But right now, no alarm bells are going off in my head about the upcoming month or so.